This is a true story taken from an actual medical file.
In a sense, brain surgery is thousands of years old. Amazingly, even prehistoric men practiced trepanning, and evidence of operations in which they opened the skull have been found in many parts of the world. And from the extent of the healing, it would appear that some of the patients lived for many years after the operation. In 1879, a first hesitant start was made by Sir William McEwan, professor of surgery at Glasgow, when he successfully removed a tumour from the membrane that covers the brain. He went on to perform several other operations, some successful, some not. But he was almost alone in the field. Few other surgeons would take the risk. They mostly felt that it was a case of fools rush in, where angels fear to tread.
Medical File. Factual stories of the men and women whose vigilance guards our lives. A reconstruction of clinical case histories, step by step, with the doctors who were there. Medical File.
Our story begins in the year 1893. An operation is about to begin at the Massachusetts General Hospital.
The patient is ready, Doctor.
Good. Now, gentlemen, let us proceed. Mr. Cushing, you will administer the anesthetic.
But, sir, I've never given an anesthetic before.
You've seen it done?
Yes.
You know what to do?
Yes, oh, at least, well, yes.
Then come along. The patient is waiting.
But, sir, please...
Mr. Cushing, if you are ever to become a surgeon, you must start somewhere. You have been a student now for 2 years. In 2 years' time, you will graduate. You must get used to taking responsibility. Now, gentlemen, this way. As you will discover when you see the patient, the operation is for a stomach tumor. In here, please. Ah. Well, here we are, my dear. And how are you feeling today?
Not too good, Doctor. It's the pain.
Yeah, don't worry, my dear. You will soon drift off into a deep sleep. And when you wake, the pain will be gone. Just close your eyes now. That's right. And breathe deeply.
Doctor, everything will be all right, won't it?
Yes, my dear. Now, breathe deeply. Mr. Cushing, the ether, please.
Yes, sir.
Breathe deeply, my dear. Take the cup away, Cushing. Take it away.
What is it? What's the matter?
Too much ether. Too fast. Quickly. Artificial respiration. Leave her. Leave her where she is.
But...
her heart has stopped. It's too late.
But it can't have. It can't have.
She is dead, Mr. Cushing.
Then I've killed her.
If you wish to be a surgeon, Mr. Cushing, this is something you will have to face up to.
I'm not fit to be a surgeon. I'm giving up medicine.
Mr. Cushing, if we all reacted that way, there would be no surgeons in the world. Every surgeon loses patients. They can't help it.
But this one, she needn't have died. You hadn't even started the operation. I killed her because I didn't know enough about anesthetics. It's murder.
Nurse, please give me a scalpel. Mr. Cushing, just watch a moment. There. Look at her stomach. A massive tumor. Nothing could have saved that woman. Nothing. In this case, she died under the anesthetic. If she had not, she would have died under the knife.
Then why operate?
Why? Partly because she was in so much pain that anything was better than that. Partly because surgery is new. We are learning all the time. Even a hopeless case may teach us something. Something that may save other lives. Mr. Cushing, if you want to be a surgeon, you must be prepared to take chances.
Harvey Cushing brooded over this incident for a long time, but in the end he resumed his studies. As a direct result, Cushing and a friend worked out a system for making a continuous record of a patient's pulse and respiration rate during operations, so that the surgeon could tell from moment to moment his patient's condition. The use of Cushing's chart system became widespread and saved many lives. In his final year at medical school, when he was 26 years old, an event occurred which was to change his life.
You're at once in emergency, Mr. Cushing. At once.
Thank you, nurse.
Ah, Cushing. Can you come and give me a hand? We've got a problem here.
Oh, what happened?
Man knocked over by a horse. Fell under the wheel of a cart. Compound fracture of the skull.
Then there's nothing you can do?
Mr. Cushing, do you remember once I told you that you should never be afraid to take a chance?
Yes, sir.
Right. If we don't do anything, this man will die in a matter of hours. If we do operate, we might, just might, save his life. Is there really any choice?
No.
Right. Come give me a hand. Nurse, please, will you stand by?
I shall never forget that operation. My first experience of brain surgery. I know that only 1 out of 8 skull fracture victims survived. And as I assisted at this operation, I realized why. The hemorrhages were fearful. It was excessive loss of blood, which was one of the greatest drawbacks to effective brain surgery. I was amazed that this man survived.
When he left Massachusetts General Hospital, Harvey Cushing managed to get an appointment to Johns Hopkins Hospital as assistant to the famous surgeon William Halsted. Halsted was at that time the most celebrated figure in American medicine, but he had a dark secret. Due to experiments he'd carried out on himself in his student days, he had become a cocaine addict. By 1895, he was well on the way to kicking the habit, but the fight against the drug left him in poor health, and often he was unable to carry out his duties in the operating theater. Cushing didn't know the real reason for Halsted's strange behavior, and it worried and bothered him. But the young surgeon soon realized that whatever the cause, the result of Halsted's ill health was that he, Cushing, was acquiring a great deal of surgical experience. Cushing wrote later of Halsted,
"He had few of the qualities supposed to accompany what the world regards as a successful surgeon. He was shy, a recluse, an aristocrat in his breeding, overmodest about his work, having little interest in private practice. A man who spent his life avoiding patients and concentrating on problems of clinical surgery."
From Halsted, Cushing learned the precision and meticulousness of work, and he soon displayed a delicacy of touch that surpassed even that of Halsted himself. In 1900, when he was 31, Cushing went to Europe for the first time. There he watched other master surgeons at work and learned the practice of taking a patient's blood pressure during surgery. This gives some indication as to the degree of shock. When he returned, his appointment at Johns Hopkins Hospital had expired, but he applied for reappointment, but with a difference. William Halsted could hardly believe his ears.
You want to do what?
Specialize in brain surgery.
There isn't a... I mean, no other doctor in the
I
world...
I know. I would be the first brain specialist. I know what it means. But I remember someone saying to me once, never be afraid to take a chance.
This isn't taking a chance. It's committing suicide. Do you know how many brain tumor patients we've had in this hospital in the last 10 years?
It must be thousands.
It is. And out of those thousands, 32 were correctly diagnosed before they died. 2 were operated on. Neither lived. Now, what kind of odds are those?
The odds could be improved.
Improved? Oh, really? You must be out of your mind. Look, the field to be in is orthopedics. That's an up-and-coming area. It needs young men like you. You could make a name for yourself.
I don't want to be an orthopedic surgeon. I want to study the brain. That's where everything happens.
But you'll only get the hopeless cases. No one will take that kind of chance while there's any other possibility.
At first, yes.
But what makes you think you can change things?
You said just now that no other surgeon in the world specializes in brain surgery.
That's right. They've got more sense.
All right. But don't you see? That's just why it is so risky. No one bothers to specialize. No one bothers to study the problems. So no advances are made.
And you are going to change all that.
Yes. Look, Dr. Halsted, you were a pioneer once. You took chances. What about the time you gave your sister an injection of blood from your own veins when she was dying after childbirth? What about the gallbladder operation you performed on your own mother against the advice of all the experts?
Well, that was different.
No, it wasn't. It's just that you're older now and you've grown cautious.
You're darn right I have. I've learned what can happen when you take chances.
Look, I know that you're only trying to help me and stop me from doing something you feel is wrong, but...
Stop you throwing your career down the drain, you mean?
All right. But all I'm asking is a chance to try. A chance to prove myself right or wrong.
No, 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 I'll not allow it. I shall do everything I can to block your appointment. You'll never become a brain specialist in this hospital.
But Harvey Cushing was young, determined, and full of self-confidence, whereas William Halstead was older and disillusioned, and so Cushing won. He was allowed to remain at Johns Hopkins and to specialize in neurosurgery. Soon he was specializing even further, concentrating on the treatment of brain tumors. At first, like every other surgeon working in this field, he experienced close to 100% mortality. But gradually, he began to achieve important results. And students from all over came to watch him operate and listen to him talk.
Now, gentlemen, I always operate in absolute silence. I will allow no talking at all during an operation, no matter how long it takes. Is that understood? It may mean silence for 3 hours. There will be silence, complete and utter. Now, as you are aware, a tumor grows. The capacity of the skull remains constant. Therefore, as the tumor becomes larger, it presses on the brain, causing headaches, sickness, blindness, paralysis, and death. This is all because there is insufficient space inside the skull. Now, obviously, the best treatment is to remove the tumor. But so far, the only growths that we can locate successfully are those which affect the motor areas. These we can attempt to remove. With other growths, we can only help to remove the pressure inside the skull. I do what I call a palliative decompression. This involves cutting away the flap of bone from under the muscles of the temple, or at the back of the skull. This gives the brain the needed expansion room, but the muscles prevent any ugly bulging. However, gentlemen, you must remember that this is only a stopgap. The only real treatment for a brain tumor is to surgically remove it. And to be able to perform this successfully, we must study, experiment, and learn. And if necessary, take chances.
This is what Harvey Cushing went on to do. To study, experiment and learn, and take chances. And indeed, his study of brain tumors took him into many strange places.
Roll up, roll up, roll up! We're just about to start the show, ladies and gentlemen, so roll on up! See, the amazing balancing seal. Tiny Tim and his friend, the gigantic giant. Come and see the painted lady.
Oh, I want to see that.
I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing like it anywhere else in the world. So roll up, roll up, roll up.
Excuse me.
Hi there. What can we do for you, friend? You want a ticket to see the painted lady?
No, thank you, but can you tell me where I can find that lady there on that poster? This woman.
The poster? The ugliest woman in the world. Well, you sure have some strange taste.
Where may I find her, please?
All right, all right. She lives in that railway coach over there. But, mister, you better take a sack with you.
Come in. Who are you?
Don't be frightened. I won't hurt you. I'm a doctor.
Doctor? What do you want?
I heard about you and I wanted to meet you. Talk to you.
Why?
May I sit down?
If you can find anywhere to sit.
Thank you. Tell me, those pictures, are they your children?
Yeah?
They're lovely children. What? Is something wrong?
No, it's just headache. Nothing.
Do you get them often?
Yeah, most days.
Why do you stay here with the circus?
What else could I do? My sight's bad. I gotta get money for the children.
Your sight's not good, you say? How many fingers am I holding up?
too.
I'll hold my hand closer. Now tell me.
Three. You did say you was a doctor?
Yes.
Is there anything I... Well, I mean, can you help me?
I had to tell her no. Sitting there in that sordid railway coach surrounded by photographs of her children, I had to tell that pitiful, coarse-featured creature with the enormous jaw and near-blind eyes that there was nothing anyone could do. She was condemned to a life of misery, being laughed at by the crowd to earn a little money for her children. And she was condemned not only to suffer humiliation, but excruciating pain as well. For her, it was too late.
But not for others. This meeting with the ugliest woman in the world led Cushing to study the pituitary gland. This gland's malfunction was the cause of the woman's grotesque deformity. Until Harvey Cushing took up this work, knowledge of the pituitary gland was theoretical and little could be done to reach it. It's located at the base of the brain and gives out several internal secretions. It controls body growth, so incorrect functioning can produce dwarves or even giants. It influences the sex glands. It affects the amount of sugar in the blood. In fact, there's hardly a function of the body in which this gland has no part. All this was discovered by the patient research of men like Harvey Cushing. In 1909, he performed his first operation on the gland. It was causing a condition of extreme growth due to overactivity.
So, you think you know enough to operate, eh?
Yes, sir.
Another example of taking a chance?
I've spent a long time studying the gland.
But you don't really know what will happen when you operate.
No, but I do know what will happen if I don't operate. This man will become a freak like the woman in the circus. It was too late to help her. It isn't too late to help this man.
So, you're going to take a chance?
Yes.
Will you remove the whole gland?
Oh, no, that would be fatal. I shall cut in through the forehead and take about half the gland out.
Well, you have great courage, Cushing. I'll say that for you. And so is your patient.
And so Harvey Cushing performed the operation. The patient recovered and lived to lead a normal life. During the following 3 years, Cushing performed a number of pituitary operations, and in 1912 he published a classic book on the subject. He could claim a mortality rate of only 14%. But even Cushing had his failures.
Now, gentlemen, you are about to witness a brain tumor operation. I'm sure I don't need to tell you that I demand absolute silence in the operating theater. Absolute silence. No matter what happens, I will not have talking. Is that understood? Good. Now, you may not realize this, but one of the biggest problems in brain surgery is the loss of blood. This is why I use these. To compress the small blood vessels and arteries, they are clips of silver wire. We insert them at the bleeding points and compress them, thus sealing off the artery or vein. These wires are allowed to remain in place after the operation. Now, gentlemen, let's get to work.
I was present on that occasion. I watched fascinated as the operation went ahead in absolute silence. Mr. Cushing wasn't like most surgeons of the time. They would leave the sewing and finishing to someone else. Mr. Cushing preferred to carry through the whole operation with his own hands, no matter how many hours it might take. Slowly, carefully, he worked, arresting the blood from tiny arteries, handling everything with prodigious delicacy, never hurrying, hardly ever relaxing. For 3 hours, this went on, silently, with every moment deliberately keyed down so as to be quite undramatic. Yet behind it, a human life at stake. The patient was conscious. Mr. Cushing was working under a local anesthetic. He removed the tumor with scrupulous care. Then, as he finished the job, he noticed what seemed to be the stem of the tumor. He took it in his forceps and cut it off. But it wasn't the tumor. It was a small artery. Blood began to spurt out. He knew, and we knew, that there was nothing that could be done. The patient died quietly as Cushing watched helplessly.
But failures were becoming rarer. By 1915, he could publish the results of 130 cases with a mortality rate of only 8%, when most other surgeons were losing a third of their patients with brain tumors. Harvey Cushing was becoming famous.
Mr. Cushing, might I speak to you for a moment?
Yes, but keep it brief. I've got an appointment in 10 minutes.
Well, I'll try, but it is rather important, and catching you at the door of the hospital seemed to be the only way of getting to see you.
Well, you're seeing me. What is it?
I represent a Boston merchant. At least, I represent his estate. His name's... Peter Brent Brigham.
He's dead?
Yes.
Then he doesn't need me.
Oh, no, wait a moment. The gentleman died 25 years ago. He left his fortune to accumulate for 25 years. That time is now up, and we are about to begin building a hospital in Boston.
So?
Well, I have been deputed to ask you to be surgeon-in-chief.
Harvey Cushing used to say that only once in his life had he been persuaded to take a proper holiday, and he went fishing in Canada. That was the year the Great War broke out, 1914. The Peter Brent Brigham Hospital in Boston had only just opened when Harvey Cushing went overseas to France for the grimmest and most exciting surgical experience of his life. In the horror of the casualty clearing stations, he learned new ideas and frequently clashed with military authority. But then one day...
Where am I?
You collapsed, Mr. Cushing. You are in hospital.
Hospital? Oh, this is the first time in my life I've been on the receiving end. What's the matter with me?
We are not sure yet.
Well, one thing's for sure. I'm not lying around here. There's work to be done.
No, please don't, monsieur.
What's the matter with me? I can't walk and my hands are numb. What's happened to me?
The strange ailment was never identified, but it robbed the surgeon of feeling in his hands and legs. After some time, he recovered the use of his hands, but his legs and feet were never the same again. Sometimes, when moving along a hospital corridor, he would abruptly stop and begin to talk about a patient. Or when outside, he would suddenly halt and look at a flower or a bush. These were only clever disguises for a distressing cramp in his legs caused by a narrowing of the arteries. He operated less frequently after the war and experienced constant pain. In 1926, his son Bill was killed in a car accident, yet Cushing performed a 3-hour operation immediately after hearing the sad news. That same year, he pioneered a new development, the use of electric needles to cauterize brain tumors. At the age of 62, he performed his 2,000th brain operation.
Yes, I shall be 63 next year. The age for compulsory retirement. Strange, isn't it? I set that age limit myself when I first started work here at Brent Brigham Hospital.
But you're the surgeon in charge, sir. You don't have to stick by the rules. You could change them.
Oh, yes, I suppose I could. You know, when you're 40 years old, 63 seems such an age away. A man is old at 63, you say, but I don't feel old. Not most of the time.
Then change the rules, sir. Stay on.
No. Surgery is a job for a young man. Age robs a human body of so much. Our brains grow cautious. Our hands tremble. I was right. Brain surgeons shouldn't carry on after 63. Yet, you know, it doesn't seem like 20 years since I made that decision. It just seems like yesterday.
On his retirement from the Boston Hospital, Harvey Cushing was offered the professorship of neurosurgery at Yale University, a post that was specially created for him. He died at the age of 70 of a heart attack. Harvey Cushing's predominance in the field of brain surgery is one of the remarkable facts of medical history. There are few other instances where one single individual made a branch of surgery so thoroughly his own. Before Cushing, brain surgery was unknown country. Today, it is common knowledge. The number of human beings who are alive today, as a direct result of Harvey Cushing's work, must number many tens of thousands.
Medical File, the documented story of the men and women who in hospitals, research centers, and lonely surgeries guard our lives. Listen again next week for another true story from Medical File.